If we stop to think about what's in the gloss on the apples we bite into, the water we drink and wash with, the shampoo we use in our hair, the cleaner we spray on the carpet, and even the air we breathe, we might feel a bit anxious knowing that every day we're being exposed to chemicals with long names and bad reputations. For this week's Please Explain, we're talking about those toxins, what they are, where they're found, how we can reduce our exposure to them and get them out of our bodies. And joining us now is Bruce Laurie, one of Canada's leading environmental thinkers and co-author of the international best-selling book Slow Death by Rubber Duck. His latest book, written with Rick Smith, is called Tox In, Tox Out: Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Body and Our World. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
And we invite our listeners to join in the conversation. You can call us at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org and also join in on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So what qualifies as a toxin?
Well, toxin basically is a pretty general term, meaning anything that's poisonous to living things. So, in our book, we focus on toxins that are mostly synthetic chemicals and things that are hidden in products that we might otherwise not know about. So, you know, there's the real serious toxins out there like lead and arsenic and dioxin, and then there's all these little hidden toxins that we don't know about, and that's typically what Rick and I focus on.
And can we break these toxins down into clearly understandable categories?
The one way that scientists do it is by looking at whether or not they have certain properties. So are they persistent, meaning do they last in the environment? Are they bioaccumulative, meaning do they actually get into our bodies? And are they toxic, meaning once they get into our bodies, are they harmful? And so any of the chemicals that have all three of those things happening at the same time, persistent, bioaccumulative, and toxic, like the scientists actually call them PBTs, those are the ones that we have to be really worried about.
And what are the main ways that we take in toxins? Do we eat and drink them, breathe them in? Do we absorb them through our skin?
Yeah, all of those things. And so, in fact, that's partly how Rick and I organized our thinking around our new book, was really looking at exactly that. So we breathe in chemicals every day. Sometimes, you know, we often think of outdoor air pollution as a big source of chemicals, but more and more it's indoors. And, you know, Americans spend about 90% of their lives indoors. When you think about it, we're in our houses, we're in our cars, we're in our offices, and we're always breathing in these chemicals from plastics and glues and vinyls and fabrics, foams, you know, all that stuff. So so we're breathing stuff in, the body lotions and shampoos and things that people are, you know, smearing over their bodies every day have chemicals in them, so we absorb them through our skin. And then, of course, eating food and drinking water, we're ingesting chemicals, and we focus one of our chapters in the new book just on how readily pesticides get into our bodies when we're eating food that isn't organic.
You mentioned dioxins. Are they the very worst toxins that we typically consume?
Dioxins would be up there, but
what else?
There's things like PCBs, which thankfully most have been banned. The heavy metals we're exposed to, things like I mentioned arsenic, but lead, mercury, cadmium we're exposed to. And then some of the synthetic chemicals like benzenes that are off-gassing. There's a category that are called volatile organic compounds, so they include things like benzene and toluene. And then the whole range of pesticides. So there's a lot out there, if you look at the top list, you'd have some of the heavy metals, and then things like PCBs and benzene.
Well, when I was in art school, we were very aware of the fact that the cadmiums in paints were dangerous, but cleaned our brushes with benzene, and then I had a teacher tell me, this is way back when, that could lead to leukemia. Is that possible?
Yeah, definitely. Benzene is a known carcinogen.
Many of the things that we talk about in these kinds of conversations are connected to plastics, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. So there's a whole group of chemicals called phthalates, and those are, it's a weird word that has a silent pH, but phthalates are a group of chemicals that are added to plastics to make them soft and pliable. They're also added to, it's a kind of oil, and they are also added to all kinds of consumer products because they have this strange property of enhancing scent. So you'll have phthalates in shampoos, you'll have phthalates in the vinyl of your shower curtain, and that's one of those synthetic plastic chemicals that's all around us.
So when it says, now with a new lovely lemon scent, we should be worried about that?
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the simple ways to figure out how to avoid chemicals like phthalates when you're purchasing shampoos and deodorants and body lotions is try to buy things that aren't heavily scented. Because if it's got a lot of scent, there's a very good chance that it has a lot of phthalates. And some of those things, you know, those air fresheners that you plug into the wall or hang in your car, I mean, those things can be, you know, 25% or more pure phthalates. So you're just breathing in this, very heavily scented, volatile chemical that's really not healthy. And it's linked to prostate cancer.
So that's one of the problems that they can cause. There are a whole bunch of different kinds of phthalates. There's DEP, there's DINP. What is that? DEP, diethyl phthalate, and
diethyl phthalate and diosinyl phthalate. Those are just different categories of phthalates. They're just slightly different chemical compositions that are used in slightly varying applications. But essentially, they're the same kind of chemical with similar properties. It's just that manufacturers choose variations based on exactly what they want them to do.
And they can be endocrine disruptors, can't they?
Yeah, that's right. So one of the things that Rick and I focused on, in a large measure in the first book, Slow Death by Robert Duck, where we really talked about what the health problems are this emerging field of the understanding around endocrine disruption. So these are chemicals that actually mimic hormones in our body. And so when our body is receiving these chemicals, and particularly it's in the fetus and the developing child, when your body is confused in thinking that you're receiving a natural hormone from your endocrine system, when really what you're receiving is a synthetic hormone and a chemical that, we talked about a lot, bisphenol A or BPA plastic, it mimics estrogen. And we know that higher levels of estrogen actually lead to breast cancer. So it's partly why when you look at the huge increase in behavioral disorders like ADHD or childhood asthma epidemic, which we can't really explain, reproductive problems later in life, a lot of this now is being increasingly correlated to the pervasive use of these endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
Is bisphenol A, BPA, also a phthalate?
No, it's not a phthalate.
Now, how did we come to this situation, these things that are used in plastics turning out to be endocrine disruptors? Is that just coincidental?
That's a good question.
I mean, I'm sure somebody didn't say, let's stick some endocrine disruption into this plastic.
Yeah. No, I know some of my colleagues like to attribute maliciousness to the manufacturing sector, but it isn't that at all. I think that what's happened over the years is that we've had very poor testing and safety requirements in the manufacturing industry and in the chemical industry and certainly in the cosmetics industry. And so what's ended up happening is people find these kind of really groovy new chemicals, and they have these properties that are really amazing, and they're really cheap. So often these chemicals, they use them because they're, it's a lot cheaper to put in a little teeny bit of, to use your example, lemon scent and a whole lot of phthalates than it is to put in a whole lot of lemon scent if you want to scent something. And so you end up with these chemicals being used all over the place, and you've got manufacturers that find really fascinating ways to stick them, things like triclosan, the antibacterial chemical that's all over the place now. And then later people start finding that there are, problems with, like maybe, the whole early endocrine disruption research was really looking at amphibians and seeing the changes in the reproductive organs of amphibians, and then people going back and looking at, well, what could be causing this? And it was that research and the early work of Theo Kohlborn that really started to put together this whole concept of these hormone mimicking chemicals that were affecting the way our bodies develop. So, and now, you know, even since we wrote Slow Death by Rubber Duck 4 years ago, there's been a tremendous advance in our understanding of these chemicals. And thankfully, we're starting to see a lot of progress manufacturing world in starting to get these chemicals out of products.
And I'm talking with Bruce Laurie, who is co-author of Slow Death by Rubber Duck, and more recently, Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. It's published by St. Martin's Press. Our number here, 212-433-9692. You can also write to us online at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Before we go to some of the calls, are any plastics totally safe? Our drinks, our milk comes in plastic containers. So much food comes in plastic containers. We store our food in plastic containers. We microwave our food in plastic containers. Is that all bad?
Yeah, you know, it's not all bad in one way, in that there are many plastics that are relatively inert. So it means that the chemicals aren't leaching into our food. I would certainly never recommend that anybody microwave in plastic. That's a bit of a recipe for disaster.
Which we all do.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I don't, but yeah, I suppose. And the other side of this, and we actually talk about this in the final chapter of Tox In, Tox Out, is the extent to which all of these plastics are ultimately getting into landfills or incinerators, or, you know, going to China and not, you know, getting pushed into rivers or the huge floating garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean. So we have a whole other problem with plastics that isn't related to the chemicals in our food, but just to the gross amount of pollution that's being created. And we've doubled the amount of waste that those of us who live in cities generate in 10 years. So from 2003 to 2013, we've doubled. And to me, that's just absolutely shocking. And so I spoke to people who are trying to manage waste in Los Angeles, for example. And one of the big problems is that so much of our waste now is plastic, and they can't recycle it properly. They can't separate it properly. A lot of it just breaks down, and the chemicals end up, you know, leaching out of landfills into our drinking water, which is, you know, we talked about at the beginning about how we, you know, ingest some of these through the water we drink. So that's kind of the bigger global cycle problem with plastic.
And we'll address some of the other sources of toxins, like foods, like apples, or cosmetics, or household cleaners and the like. But I want to slip in a call here. And Michael from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I wanted to ask the author. I've heard about other research, even the documentary about bags, about plastics and the dangers thereof. My question is, then what's the alternative? Because from all like news reports, like the Lopez Show and others, everything has chemicals and toxins for preservation, for flavor, for taste, et cetera, et cetera. Where can we turn if we go everywhere, some markets and stores, there are things that have toxic chemicals and properties to us?
And that was going to be the subject of the second part of this conversation. He pretty much covered it all.
Yeah. So just in terms of, and sorry, the line was a little bit fuzzy for me, so I missed a bit of the question.
He's saying they're everywhere. You pretty much can't avoid these toxins. They're in our food. They're in the things that our foods are packed in. And, you know, but it's pretty hard to live a life today without coming in contact with these toxins.
It is very hard. The good news is that increasingly there are many, many alternatives. So organic food is much more widely available today than it was, say, even 5 years ago. The prices of organic food, although still, you know, higher, sometimes considerably higher, are coming down. Many product manufacturers, if you just look at personal care products, for example, are now listing on, you know, very clearly on the label that they're phthalate-free, paraben-free, you know, made with organic ingredients. And what we've seen is major manufacturers just in the last few months, even like Avon and Johnson & Johnson, Campbell's Soup, Walmart, all coming out with plans to, you know, in the case of Johnson & Johnson, remove parabens and phthalates from their products, Campbell's Soup, phasing out the BPA linings of tin cans, Walmart coming up with a list of chemicals that they are going to make sure are no longer in the products that they're selling. So I think we're in this little transition right now where it does feel a little overwhelming. All of this stuff is all around us, but there are increasingly, like exponentially, growth in the number of healthier, safe alternatives out there for us.
My guest is Bruce Lowry, who is an environmentalist and co-author of the international bestseller Slow Death by Rubber Duck. His latest book, also written with Rick Smith, is called Toxin, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. It's published by St. Martin's Press. We will continue our conversation and look into some of the other places where there are toxins in our environment, and then what we can do to get rid of toxins that are in our body, because there are some very sensible ways of doing it, and there are some that may be even more harmful than the toxins themselves. All coming up after we take a little break. And we are back with Bruce Lowry, who is co-author of the bestseller Slow Death by Rubber Duck, and more recently, Toxin, Tox Out, very clever, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. It's published by St. Martin's Press. And we're going to take your calls at 212-433-9692. Barbara from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I called because I used to work for a cosmetic company whose products had very nice scents. And we were told that these products, cosmetics, shampoos, whatever, are made of ingredients that have their own scent. And when you mix them all together, they don't often smell very good at all. So if you create a product that has no scent at all, you have to know that there are chemicals added to those products to neutralize the scent. In other words, to take away the smell of what it would have been had there not been anything added. So it seems that no matter what you do, you can't get away from additional ingredients with regard only to fragrance. So I just wanted people to know that. And I don't know if these neutralizing ingredients are toxins, but, you know, why not?
Well, some of them come with a label that says, you know, natural, no scent.
Right.
And so you're saying that there are chemicals put into them to make them not smell like something.
Exactly. And the other thing is that word natural, natural, organic, all of that. Natural doesn't necessarily mean non-toxic. Natural doesn't necessarily mean healthy.
Yes, you know, arsenic and lead are natural. Bruce, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, no, I think that those are really good points. I've actually never heard of chemicals being added to, you know, kind of neutralize scent. That's really interesting. It doesn't surprise me. There are I have now more and more faith in companies who, when they're putting things on their labels, they're being honest about it. And because, you know, these days with social media and so many people being so engaged and the brands being so valuable for these companies, they're not going to risk kind of messing us around. So if you see a product that says, you know, no fragrance added, you know, scent free, I think, and particularly it'll be like no perfume, no phthalates. I mean, that means they're not putting those chemicals in, and we know that those are harmful chemicals. Your point around natural as a word is absolutely right. The word natural means nothing, and even on shampoos, the word organic doesn't usually mean anything. It has to be either certified organic, which means it meets a standard that's regulated by government, or but if you just see the word natural, it's meaningless. So those are all good points that your caller has made.
But Bruce, so I look at the label. I'm in the store. I look at the label and I see a string of chemical names that I can't pronounce. And I have no idea whether those are perfectly benign chemicals or toxic chemicals or chemicals that may be okay, but then later are going to come back to haunt me.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the problem. So so what we've tried to do in our book is really isolate what are the chemicals that are most troublesome, that we're most likely to find. So Rick and I basically do an assessment of, it's a combination of how pervasive are they in terms of their use, and then which are the ones that the evidence is suggesting are most problematic, and then we highlight those. So there's thousands and thousands of chemicals out there. You know, the majority of them aren't harmful. So we try to focus on how do you get a sense of the ones, like the ones that are carrying fragrance or the particular plastics or pesticides. Pretty much any pesticide isn't going to be good for you. To try to distill it into a small group of things that we can manage as we're making choices.
Well, are cosmetics generally dangerous? We mentioned shampoos, for example. There are lotions, but there's also makeup, lipsticks. Are they all made with potentially toxic substances?
Yeah, mostly. And again, you know, and I would say the cosmetics industry is probably the slowest to get into the healthy alternative product lines. They're just starting right now. It also happens to be the industry where I would say there is the least regulation. Often what happens is a company can come up with a formulation, and that formulation, you know, may have a dozen chemicals in it, but they will claim that that formulation is proprietary. It's their proprietary scent, for example, in a perfume, and they basically hide behind corporate laws around, you know, intellectual property.
And they're no longer using ambergris? Whale vomit?
I'm not sure if they still are or not. I mean, some of the problematic ones are things, you know, like you can find lead and cadmium in makeup, and that's hugely problematic.
Let's take a caller from Texas. Barbara, where in Texas?
Pardon me?
Where in Texas are you? That's a big state.
Houston.
Okay, so what do you want to talk to Bruce about?
I wanted to ask Bruce, even if we did change our ways, what happens to all of this toxic stuff that's here now? What's going to happen to it? Isn't it going to still be here and we're still going to be exposed to it?
Good question. And can we build up resistance to toxins the same way that we build up resistance to bacteria?
No. Toxins are basically it's just simply toxic. Like you don't, they're not a biological thing. They damage your cells or they damage your neurons, depending on the kind of toxin. So there's no such thing as toxic resistance. In terms of the stuff all around us, you know, it's a good point, and that's why earlier when I mentioned this concept of persistence, it's really problematic when chemicals that stay in the environment for a long time are used, because it means they're not breaking down, you know, like the Teflon chemicals. They're highly, highly persistent. But in other
cases, we shouldn't be using Teflon.
That's correct.
In fact, Nora Ephron once did a recipe where she joked. She said, heat up the Teflon pan until you see the carcinogens emerging as part of the smoke.
That's about right. Well, in fact, if you heat them really high on a burner and you have a bird in your house, the fumes will actually destroy the lungs and kill your bird.
Oh, boy.
they can be very harmful. So getting back to that point of, you know, so all the chemicals are around us, many of these chemicals break down very quickly in the environment, and they break down very quickly in our bodies. So that's the good news. So if you stop using some of these products that contain the chemicals that many of the chemicals that we're talking about, within hours or days, you will have measurably lower levels of those chemicals in your body. So it's actually good news that and Rick and I have done the studies both in our first book and the second book just to show how rapidly the levels of these chemicals decline in your body as soon as you stop using them.
Thank you for your call, Barbara.
Thank you.
Now, what about doing things like fasting? Is that there, you know, the internet is so is just filled with suggestions. Some of them sound a little dangerous to me. Chelation therapy, for example, colonics. Are they the better way to detoxify, or should we just try to stay away from toxins?
Yeah, we really prescribe kind of three things in the book very generally. The first one is, and the most important one, is avoiding chemicals in the first place. And, you know, as we've said, it's hard to avoid all the chemicals around us. But
for example, you go into an office building and they've just cleaned the carpets. And I have no idea what kind of cleaner they've used, but it smells terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, that's a tough one to avoid. We can avoid pesticides.
Quit your job.
But yeah, right. I mean, we all have these trade-offs. You know, that's why. So that takes me to number three in our list of three things, which is governments have to start doing a better job of testing these chemicals for health and safety, so they don't go in the products in the first place. So that's the big picture one, right? We got to really shift the economy so that we're not producing this crap and sticking it into products that, you know, kids eat or play with or put in their hair. So number one, though, is generally avoiding them in terms of our own purchase choices. So we can buy cleaner, safer shampoos and soaps, and we can buy organic food, and, you know, we can avoid a lot of those things. Second, in the overall, you know, of the three things, is we can actually do things to reduce the levels of chemicals in our bodies. And your example about, you know, these cleanses and things like that, what you really want to be doing is a detox lifestyle. So if you're ingesting crap or breathing things in or not paying attention to what you're doing 51 weeks of the year, you're not going to suddenly get rid of all of them by, you know, blending broccoli for a week and drinking that, right? So a lot of these juice cleanses and, you know, 48-hour cleanse diets or, you know, 5-day cleanse diets, some can be harmful. They're mostly not harmful, but what you really want to be thinking about is you should be eating more vegetables every day. You should be drinking more water every day. So a lot of these cleanses are nothing more than a bunch of vegetables in a bunch of water that you drink a whole lot of over 5 days. Well, rather than doing that over 5 days and not eating anything else, which is the unhealthy part, what you need to be doing is just eating vegetables and drinking water every day and eating less meat, eating less animal fat, and you'll be healthier. And it turns out that not only is this good for you from a cardiovascular perspective, but these by eating vegetables and soluble and insoluble fibers and drinking a lot of water, that actually enhances our body's own detox mechanisms, and that's what we want to be doing.
Well, there's that old phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, and yet the EU recently banned American apples because many are sprayed with a substance called, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, diphenylamine or DPA.
Right.
It's
right.
What prevents the brown spots. I've heard that DPA isn't harmful on its own, but that it breaks down into carcinogens.
And that's actually the case for many of these chemicals, is that they start out, you know, as a stable chemical, and then they get exposed either, you know, to oxygen, or maybe it's the skin of the apple, or you know, just over time the chemical composition breaks down, and they create toxic or carcinogenic byproducts, cancer-causing byproducts. So that's a common problem with these chemicals, and it makes it very tough. You know, this gets to really a fundamental challenge that we have with our regulatory system is, you know, if you go back to, you know, 1970-ish when, you know, the U.S. set up the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, you know, the main pieces of legislation to, you know, control toxic chemicals, they were never imagining, you know, chemicals on apples that broke down. They were looking at smokestacks from coal-fired power plants and incinerators and sewage treatment plants and chemical companies. So our regulatory system really isn't designed to deal with these much more complicated, you know, nuanced chemicals that are not kind of traditionally toxic, but more toxic, like endocrine disruptors.
Which organs in our bodies work hardest to get rid of these toxic substances?
Well, our liver's number one, right? That's our big detox organ. But it turns out, in the same way that we talked about how we breathe in chemicals. We absorb them through our skin. We also remove chemicals that way. So we, believe it or not, you can exhale chemicals. You can sweat chemicals out. But still, number one is our liver, and that's partly why the recommendation is that you drink a lot of water, because, you know, as we know, our bodies are primarily are made of water. Our cells are filled with water. Our blood's mostly made of water. And the more water we drink, the more that we're literally flushing out these chemicals through our liver and our whole, you know, I mean, we have a number of organs that specialize in detoxing, but the whole system runs with fresh water.
Daniel from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air. Daniel?
Hi.
Yes.
My question it relates to the movement away from animal testing of products, and my question is whether or not there's a tension between that and ensuring that there aren't these unintended consequences from untested chemicals, like knowing that a chemical is going to be an endocrine inhibitor or something like that.
That's a really interesting question. You know, one of the things that's happening, I describe it in, again, in the, sort of the last section of the book, is the emergence of green chemistry. And so there are actually now companies that are creating like software screening programs so that you can look at a chemical's properties before it even gets manufactured, and you can estimate whether or not it will be likely, you know, carcinogenic or mutagenic or, you know, an endocrine-disrupting chemical just based on the chemical structure. So what that does is it takes the whole chain of safety down from testing it once it's manufactured to basically screening it before it's even manufactured. So I think that's the direction that we're going in, and hopefully we can avoid testing on animals as well as creating safe products at the same time.
Now, you mentioned sweating. Is sauna a good way to get rid of some of these things from our body?
Yeah, it turns out
physical exercise?
Yeah, both physical exercise. Physical exercise has a couple of benefits. One, again, because, you know, if you're drinking a lot of water and, you know, the water's going into our bloodstream and then you're exercising, you're basically, pumping all that blood through our liver and through our kidneys. Kidneys also a good detox organ. So exercise has that benefit. It turns out that more and more experts that are focused on detox, some nutritionists, naturopaths, and alternative physicians looking at detox, are actually using sauna therapy as a way to remove certain chemicals. And so I did an experiment in the book in the sauna where I actually was collecting my sweat and then measuring what chemicals are in my sweat. And it turns out that chemicals like BPA, bisphenol A, and phthalates were actually being sweated out while I was in the sauna. And studies are actually showing that you can sweat out certain chemicals more than would be removed, say, through your urine. So it's this... you know, we don't really understand all of the mechanisms behind it, but the simple answer is yes, sweating is good. The reason people do saunas is because, and particularly people are using infrared saunas, because you can stay in them for quite a bit longer and it'll induce a heavier sweat without causing other, a traditional sauna can be stressful for people that have heart problems or, you know, high blood pressure, things like that. So I actually happen to enjoy saunas for a whole lot of reasons, but now I enjoy them even more knowing that the chemicals are coming out.
Well, many people swear by New York's water, but there are people who use Brita's. There are others who will just simply buy bottled water, although it comes in plastic containers usually. Should we be detoxifying our New York water? Should we be using something like a Brita filter?
Yeah, I'm a fan of filters myself. I drink tap water here in Toronto. Toronto's also proud of its water quality.
Well, Toronto stands in for New York in so many movies and might as well stand in for its water as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And a lot of them are filmed right out my window here. So first of all, drinking tap water is better than drinking bottled water for a whole lot of reasons. Tap water is actually more rigorously tested than bottled water. So you know you're actually going to have safer water if you're drinking tap water, in my view, in most major metropolitan regions. But you're still going to have a lot of things. Some of them are biological, like, I don't know about New York, but at the end of August in Toronto, our water's a little bit stinky. And that's just kind of biological stuff that's in there. It's not harmful. But if you use a filter, just a basic, like a Brita charcoal filter, it'll be removing that. And then there's also filters now that are quite inexpensive. You can have them either on your counter or under your sink. And if you're looking for a really good one, it'll be called a 10-stage filter. So it'll have some, you know, reverse osmosis and coal filters and things in it. And they actually get rid of all kinds of stuff in your water. And, you know, if you're at all concerned, I think it's not a bad idea to filter your water.
I didn't want to end this without a Vic's question. Hi, Vic, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I wondered if there are any suggestions on the most effective ways that the average person can get their elected representatives to end or stop some of the millions of tons of dangerous, suspect chemicals that are put into our environment, our food, our water, annually by the chemical conglomerate.
Well, so many people in politics are against more regulation. So aren't we fighting a losing battle here, Bruce?
Well, it's a difficult battle without question. And that's thank you so much for that question, because that's actually the very final section of our book, which is the need to actually be asking and demanding that our politicians do a better job of regulating chemicals. I mean, this idea that we just let the companies that sell chemicals figure out whether they're safe or not is absurd. And that's largely what we do in North America. So I think, and it can start, we see a lot more progress at the municipal level and at the state level. The federal level, you know, both in Canada and the U.S. for some reason, just don't seem to be doing their job on this. So I think if we start focusing and just, you know, asking our local politicians and our state politicians, what are you doing about this, and then start to build broader support, then we can start to pressure federal politicians. I mean, I wouldn't suggest that you don't pressure them now, but it seems strategically we're getting a little more progress at the local level.
Bruce Laurie, Lourie, co-author of Slow Death by Rubber Duck, bestseller, and more recently, Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World, published by St. Martin's Press. Thank you so much for being on today's Please Explain Look at Toxins.
Well, thank you so much, Leonard. It's my pleasure.